Let's give a welcome to Straight Out Scribes. Can you share the mic? No more than 10, please.
I'm going to start a revolution.
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 I'm going to start a revolution in my soul.
I'm going to seize control of all I have within me.
Anything to make me whole.
Or high.
Or both. I'm going to start a revolution.
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 I'm going to start a revolution in my soul.
Greetings, my name is Dajabu.
I'm Dr. V.S. Chochezi.
And together we are
Straight Out Scribes.
Calling all poets. They're trying to kill Mumia. They're trying to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal. This is a wake-up call. This is a wake-up, smell the coffee and know what time it is call. We need your poems to free our brother. We need your poems to stop the cops from killing writer, seer, knower, Mumia with their injustice machine designed to eliminate, incinerate, incarcerate, and obliterate anything that threatens their stake and take policies. We need you, poets. We need you now. We need you now to say and pray our brother free from his political captivity. Pick up your pens and start the attack. Use your voice to beat them back. Throw words at them that will freeze them in their tracks. Knock them flat with punctuation. Badow, 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 badow. Make mojo, juju, conjure sounds that will choke them down to the ground. Why, yoy, stab them three times with similes, metaphors, and rhymes that will shake them up and blow their minds. Stick and move, move and stick them to the quick with sarcasm and wit. Spit prose on their suits. Drop heavy, 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 heavy lines on their boots. Shoot down all their lies and alibis. So they'll doubt what they're all about, trying to take Mumia out. Make every single syllable count. Hit them high, hit them low, so they can't hurt no more of our Mumias, Geronimos, Peltiers, Ramonas, Mondos, Angelas, calling all poets, Nats, Matulus, calling all poets, Mathams, Martins, calling all poets, Rodney's, Garveys, calling all poets, George's, Jonathan's, calling all poets, Bobby's, Huey's, calling all poets, Dessie's, Osiris, calling all poets, Delbert's, Hampton's, calling all poets, John Africa and Move Family, calling all poets, calling all poets, calling all y'all badass revolutionary poets. They're trying to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal, y'all. This is a wake-up call. We've got to win this fight for truth and right. Come poet and poet and poet and sing and play and shout and poet and say and poet and poet and poet and lean and dip and poet and sway and be and vibe and poet and show and poet and poet and poet and know that poetry can be what you want it to be. So let's use it to set Mumia free, calling all poets, calling all poets. Calling all y'all youthful, truthful, lyrical, satirical, published, unpublished, dead or alive, tall, short, fat, skinny, serious, or jive, black, brown, red, white, daytime, nighttime, new school, old school, comical, funk, populist, environmentalist, frantic, romantic, erotic, or exotic, poets come. Poet, poets come, poet, come and poet and poet and poet and speak, and poet and poet and poet and sing. Calling all y'all. Badow!
That's my mama, y'all. That's the job. Yeah. Move. No, I didn't say excuse me. I said move. And I'm not trying to be rude, just trying to get you to move forward, mobilize, act, do, think. Can't keep standing, sleeping, dreaming, begging, sitting in the way, doing nothing, just whining, complaining, stuck in a rut and can't get up, talking about the man, the system, them people just keep doing you wrong, got you singing, we shall overcome again. Got you lying in place, crying in pain, zombification taking over your brain. Don't stagnate, don't give in, give up, procrastinate, or acculturate. Move. Move toward justice, move toward right, move toward goodness and blackness and day and night. Move toward freedom, move toward mumia, free your mind, free the move nine, and move.
Can anybody hear me?
Can anybody hear me?
Does anybody feel me?
Does anybody feel me?
Is anybody listening to what's going on?
Is anybody listening to what's going on?
We've got to stop hate.
We've got to stop hate.
Before it's too late.
Before it's too late.
With love.
With love.
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 Love. Love. Love.
Can anybody hear me?
Can anybody hear
Does
me?
Anybody
Does anybody feel me?
Is anybody
listening to what's going on?
We've got
We've
to,
got
stop,
to
hate
stop hate
before
it's
late.
Too late.
With love.
With love.
Love.
Love. Love, love, love.
Can anybody
hear me?
Does anybody
feel me?
Is anybody
listening to what's going on? We've got to stop hate.
Before it's too late.
With love, love,
love,
love, love, love.
More.
Love.
Love.
Love. Love.
Love. Try. And peace.
Okay, our first speaker we're honored to have is the chair of the African American Studies Department at University of California. When we asked her to co-sponsor this event and help build it, there wasn't a blink before she said, of course. Let's give a warm welcome to Ula Taylor.
Good evening. I don't think I'm a speaker. I think I'm just here to welcome you. And we're so excited to be a part of this conversation. The Department of African American Studies recognizes that at this particular moment, filled with political chaos, if there was ever a time to have a conversation about transformative empowerment, it's today. We're so happy to see all of you here this evening, and I know that you are going to be immensely fed, and I also look forward to being a part of the conversation. Thank you for coming.
Our next speaker, when he had a giant haircut, put a pistol in it and smuggled it into San Quentin prison, where he was alleged to have given it to George Jackson, who proceeded to shoot the guards. The police immediately came after him and had a warrant out for his arrest with the idea that perhaps they could keep him in jail for 10 years. So he left the country and he married a wonderful French woman. 14 years later, he came back to the United States, stood trial, and the jury acquitted him unanimously. Let's welcome the past president of the National Lawyers Guild Bay Area Chapter, Stephen Bingham.
Good evening. So I'm also here just to greet you just for a couple of minutes, but I wanted to very quickly draw a connection between George Jackson and Mumia that some of you may not have thought about. Mumia, aside from everything else you've learned about him, was an organizer and still is inside the prison. And he was honored by the Guild for many, many years as the vice president jailhouse lawyer, and one of his skills was lawyering for other people, not just thinking about his own situation. And as many of you know, that came to real fruition when, through his efforts and others, 4,800 prisoners in Pennsylvania were finally given expensive medication for hepatitis, which is now a movement sweeping the country. Well, what many of you may not know is that George Jackson also was an organizer. I refer to him sometimes as the Rosa Byrd of the Rosa Parks of the California prison system, because he integrated the TV room where all the blacks had to sit in the back and had 8 guards take him out. And the reason I met him was because he wanted to bring a civil lawsuit against the administration for the conditions under which the people were being held, inmates at San Quentin, a lawsuit which eventually was done successfully. So both of them share that in common, that they are inside the most unbelievable conditions, and yet they think not just about themselves, but they think about their fellow inmates. And in the case of Mumia, he thinks about people far outside the prison as well. So I'm proud to be here as a past president of the Gill chapter and listen to the incredible speeches we're going to hear in a few minutes. Thank you.
Go right in.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for this really just wonderful outpouring of support and interest in this case after a very, very long time, and I know that. I feel a little bit, as a lawyer in the program, like the fine print, you know, on the form that nobody wants to read. So I'll try to make this, you know, an interesting legal story. It's a very long legal story. I'm not going to go through the entire legal story. But it's kind of a mind-blowing legal story, actually. I will. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Good? Is that better? All right, I think he needs to lower it.
Let's go close.
Okay. Okay. I am so grateful for being here, especially at this time, because this is really a very hopeful time in the long legal story in this case. And as most of you know, and some of you are new to this story, but you will, you know, certainly have heard that most of this story has not been a happy story by any means. And we are now at a hopeful time in this story, and that's why it's so great that this is organized, that there's so many people here interested in learning about what's going on now, what has gone on, because it's an important time to get people talking about this case, especially in its current situation. And there's really new hope that there is a path to freedom for Mumia. And that's pretty amazing to be able to say and really mean it and believe it. So it's a perfect time for this gathering. I have to thank Jeff Mackler for doing this, for inviting me here, for putting this together. I know he didn't do it alone, but he has had wonderful help in doing this. But thank you, Jeff, and thank you for being such a longer than I have been involved in this, supporter in this case and of Mumia and your devotion, and it's wonderful. Thank you. Thanks to the other speakers for being here. I wish Mumia could see this room, you know. It's very heartwarming turnout here, and he doesn't take that for granted, so it's great. So before I get to the legal story, I have to congratulate you on your death penalty moratorium. And I want you to know that even though it's, you know, it's one state, it's a really important state for the abolitionist movement, because you got a lot of people on death row here. And so this is a very significant development in trying to do away with the death penalty once and for all. And I think it's going to happen. and it's happening in a lot of states, but it's very significant. And I hope the moratorium holds up. We've got one also in Pennsylvania now that has been held up, so that's great. Okay, so the legal story. As I said, it's a sad story, but it's getting a lot happier. I could talk all night telling you about the story. I will not do that. But I want to just start, you know, so it's from 1981, this story starts, at the end of the year 1981. You know that Mumia was sentenced to death. You know that he spent 29 years on death row. His death penalty, and you know, we should also know that he spent 29 years on death row. His death penalty was set aside a good number of years before he got off death row. And you might think, how could that happen? That happens because if the government appeals that win that Mumia got, then he stays on death row until the government's appeals are all done, and that took years. So he stayed on death row long after a federal court said he shouldn't be on death row. It was the federal court that said that. And he's now serving life without any chance of parole, which is the only sentence that you can get for this in Pennsylvania. So I'm going to talk to, because I know you're really interested in what's going on right now. And so that's what I want to focus on. And I think the best way for me to sort of frame it is to say it's sort of a tale of two judges. So let me talk to you about judge number one. Right? Judge number, this is an incredible story. If it weren't true, you'd say it couldn't possibly be true. Judge number one started out as a prosecutor in Philadelphia. He was a prosecuting trial attorney, and then he became the elected prosecutor for the city of Philadelphia. And when he became the elected prosecutor for Philadelphia, it was at the same time that Mumia's first round of appeals were happening. And he was the boss of the office, and he oversaw that office's defending the death sentence for Mumia and making sure, doing everything it could to make sure that that death sentence not only was upheld on appeal, but that it got carried out as soon as possible. And then that judge decided that he wanted to be a judge on the, that DA decided he wanted to be a judge on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And you know, while he was the DA, not only did he preside over the DA's office when this super high profile case was going on, with people in the streets demanding justice for Mumia, and he was fighting this, he also took a hugely active role in trying to get the death penalty implemented quickly, more quickly. You know, at the time, what was going on in Pennsylvania was that we had a governor at the time who didn't really believe in the death penalty, and he wouldn't sign death warrants, and he wouldn't set execution dates. And folks like this district attorney was very, very frustrated by that. And so he and some other people in the legislature really launched a campaign to try to force the governor to get these executions going. And he wrote letters about it, and he drafted legislation to try to force the governor's hand, because there were so many people on death row and no one was getting executed. And he specifically said that he wanted the governor to start sending warrants, most particularly to send a message to police killers that the death penalty means something in Pennsylvania. And at that time, Mumia was the only one of only three people from Philadelphia who were sentenced to death for allegedly killing a police officer. All right, well then this DA, who was the head DA of that office during Mumia's first round of appeals, decided to run for Supreme Court justice in Pennsylvania. And he campaigned very strongly on a pro-death penalty platform. And he talked about how he was responsible for sending some of the most notorious killers to death row. And he spoke to the press about it, and it was his campaign speeches about it. And he won that election, and he got onto the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And what should come up to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court not long after was Mumia's second and third and fourth rounds of appeals. So there he was, the person who prosecuted the first round of appeals, fighting to keep that death sentence alive and implemented, now becomes the judge on the appellate court reviewing later rounds of appeals. And you know, you don't have to go to law school to know that that's crazy, right? That there's no way that could be fair. There's no way that that makes any sense. And he was asked to recuse himself off the case. And he said, no. He said, I was just the boss. I couldn't keep track of what was going on with all the cases in the office. This was just one of many cases. So that seems virtually impossible to believe that Mumia Abu-Jamal's case was not front and center in his work running that DA's office. But that's what he said. And not only this was a case, and I don't have to tell you, this was a case involving police and race with international cries for Justice Mumia, and he said, no, I really wasn't paying attention to that case. It was just one case amongst many. And he said, I'm not taking myself off the case, and no one gets to review when the judge says that, and you're in the highest court in the state. So he sat on the cases. There were about four rounds of appeals spaced out over a bunch of years, and guess what happened? The appeals were denied. Now, he wasn't the only justice, but he first was an associate justice, he became the chief. The appeals were all denied. And then time went by, and in 2016, the U.S. Supreme Court decided a case called Williams versus Pennsylvania. And it wasn't a Mumia case, but it was also about this same judge who wouldn't take himself off other cases that came out of Philadelphia. And the Supreme Court said he should have. He should have taken himself off that case. And they said that it's a due process violation. If you've had a significant personal involvement with a case while you're a prosecutor, when you become a judge, you have to recuse yourself. You don't have to be a Supreme Court justice, really, to figure that out. But we needed a Supreme Court to say that. And that's what they said. And they said this is a fundamental right to an impartial tribunal, which, of course, it is. And that's what happened. So that's when we went back into court, which brings us to the second judge in my tale of two judges. And that's a judge in the lower court in Pennsylvania, where we filed a new petition and we said, that Williams case that was just decided, that should apply to Mumia too. He should get to redo those old appeals. And we got randomly assigned to a judge. And the judge, first of all, said to the judge, we have to prove, we know, that he was involved in this case when he was a DA. Of course we all know he was, but in a courtroom that's not good enough. So grant us discovery, grant us the ability to get some data from their files, get some old files, which is how we found this letter to the governor saying it's time to kill people on death row. And the judge let us do discovery, and let me just tell you, in that stage of a case, that's really rare. The judge let us do it, and we embarked on a year or so of doing that. And then the judge did something that no judge in the state system in Pennsylvania ever did for Mumia. It granted him relief. And we won. And this was just before the end of the year, on my birthday, it just so it was just before the end of the year, and we won. And what we won was the right to go back and redo four different appeals with numbers of different legal claims. And again, I could speak all night about what those claims are, about all the constitutional violations that occurred during Mumia's trial. I won't, but I'm going to give you just a quick sample, right? There's prosecutor tampering with witnesses. There's faulty forensic evidence. There's ineffective assistance of his trial lawyer. There's lack of funds for expert witnesses. And let me tell you, that's a teensy sample of what the issues are that we will now get to re-argue in an appellate court in Pennsylvania. And we got pretty lucky because we got this case in front of a judge who actually has integrity, who cares about fairness, who has the courage, which I know that Pam will certainly back me up and say that in Philadelphia, this is a big deal, right? That we got a judge to rule our way, given many things about the history of this case. I'm not suggesting you run home and do this, but if you ever feel like it, you could read Judge Tucker's opinion. It's not long, and you will see what I mean. This is a judge who really gets it, and who's not, you know, it's not like he's a major political activist, but he is trying to do the right thing. So that's where we were at the end of December. This case, though, is more, a little bit also more about, it's a tale of two judges and a district attorney, because there is a new DA in town in Philadelphia, about a year or so now. And he's ran on a very progressive platform. I think he is a progressive guy, but he's not really applying those principles in Mumia's case. He's not applying those principles in Mumia's case. And he's appealing our victory. We were very disappointed to learn that, but he's doing that. So we have to overcome that obstacle before we can start relitigating those old appeals. But I think that we'll be successful. We will defend our win. I think the law is very much on our side. And then we'll move ahead to do these old appeals with, of course, the goal being a new trial and ultimately freedom for Mumia. All right, so that's the tale. All right, that's the tale. Mumia is more optimistic about his legal situation than I ever remember him being. I've been his lawyer for 17 years now. And before I sit down, I just want to add a personal note about why I, sometimes people ask me, oh my God, are you doing this case for so long? And the main reason, really, that I love this stuff. I'm a law professor. I like some of these issues. It's stuff that I thrive on. But that's not it. It's because of Mumia and who he is and what he stands for and the kind of person he is. That's the reason. That's what keeps me going. And that's what I know keeps all of you interested and putting the pressure on. Now, there was an investigator testified at an earlier hearing. He was hired by the defense counsel, a trial lawyer, to do investigation. He wasn't an activist. He wasn't a political person. He was an investigator who worked on cases. And he went to see Mumia. And when he was on the witness stand in this one of these appeal hearings, the prosecutor was trying to get him to say that Mumia wouldn't let his lawyer do anything, that he was trying to run the show, and he can't complain that his lawyer was not good. And he was trying to get him to say that. And finally, this is what the guy said. He said, you know, my impression of Mumia was that he was probably the most gentle person I'd ever met. And he is. And he really is. You know, Mumia is a fighter. He's a revolutionary. He's courageous. He's a genius. But he is also one of the most gentle people I have ever known. And, you know, he probably deserves to be free more than any prisoner in this country. And because he's got supporters everywhere, all over the world, and there are all kinds of folks doing all kinds of things that mean a lot to this movement, young people, old people, people just learning about it. I have co-counsel, brilliant Sam Spital from NAACP Legal Defense Fund is my co-counsel, and you know we've got a lot of hope right now, and I think we really can make this happen. There's a legal path to freedom, and you know we're all really hopeful that we can really make it happen. And thank you for inviting me to tell you about it.
Welcome, Pam Africa.
One of the places where they brought tens of thousands of people into the street. First, I wanted to thank Jeff Mackler and for pulling this together, and because what he realized is that we need funds. In order to continue this part of the battle for Mumia's life, and we've got to be in the street, We have to have posters everywhere. We have got to travel. So Jeff called me and said he was going to put a fundraiser together to help us do just that. And this is this fundraiser. Now, we got something we need to shout about. And everything that Judah said is magnificent and it's wonderful. And but the only way that we can bring Mumia home is that with what Judith had brought out and what we do best, we stomp this sucker into the ground. It was this entire government, the entire government, whose desire is to execute Mumia. And they were so sure that they was going to be able to do it. Whenever we would have events like Rage Against the Machine, Chumbawamba, Black Star, which is Most Deaf, and you know some other people put together an event in Jersey for Mumia, and the Fraternal Order Police, the governor of Jersey, and lawyers and judges, they all got on, they had microphonic seizures, they got on the air and was announcing that, you know, if anyone, the Fraternal Order Police and the state troopers said we were not with any service that day, and they was on a campaign, a high campaign, every news media, Howard Stern had it on there, but the power of the people, there was a stadium that said 60,000 people. Rage Against the Machine sold that stadium out in one day. No tickets left. The Fraternal Order of Police now and the judges got together and they lied again. They said that people were turning in tickets and there was over 300 tickets that was turned in already, right? And what happened, we had a concert on the inside and on the outside, 300 tickets, and you can sell 60,000 seats in a day. And also, you can imagine what happened when they said they had 300. There was a huge concert on the outside because the 300 wasn't true. And but I say that to say it was the people. The people, Mumia's death warrant, we was able to beat it back and all against the odds. People were saying, you'll never be able to do that. But again, ain't no power like the power of the people when the power of the people don't stop. You would think they understood that. But no, Mumia comes off of death row and then he turns around. Not long after Mumia got off of death row, Mumia hadn't been sick other than a cold in the 30-something years that he spent on death row. When he got off, it was about a year later, Mumia was diagnosed. He started getting sick, and then he was diagnosed with hepatitis C. The hepatitis C pill was $1,000 a pill. You had to take it for 90 days, so you're talking about $90,000. Again, ain't no power like the power of the people when the power of the people don't stop. You had the people saying, oh no, he'll never get that, he'll never get it. But here in California, in France, in Germany, in Africa, all around, people rose to it because they understood what they couldn't kill Mumia legally on death row. And so they turned around and started this medical thing. Mumia had to give up blood when he came off of death row into general population. All of a sudden, Mumia has hepatitis C. And it was so horrible. Mumia's ear was coming off his face. His skin was completely covered with this black substance that was all over it. And he went into almost a diabetic coma. And Mumia darn near died 3 times. But you know one thing I want to talk about real fast? Tell me my timing so I can work it in here. Okay. The brothers inside the prison. People hear stories about men inside the prisons always that they're fighting, they're doing this, they're doing that. But inmates inside that prison, I learned about the love and the caring, the fathering and the mothering that goes on inside that prison. Because in order for Mumia to live, someone had to step up to this government inside the prison. We didn't know what was going on inside there at this particular time, but a brother named Major Tillery saw Mumia. Mumia's neck was this big, his head was huge, this body, his fingers would look like Fred Flintstone fingers. He couldn't fit his feet into a pair of shoes, body was just tore up from him scratching, because he scratched 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, nonstop. He wasn't sleeping. This brother saw the prison warden come through, and he said, "Yo, you got to do something about Mumia." The prison head warden, told him, "Step back, Mumia's not your business." He said, "Mumia is my business." So it started. It started men, moving on the prison institute about Mumia. Mumia, the following day, wound up in the hospital. That's when we found out that he was almost dying at that particular point. But the point here is that it was another brother, because when the medication they was giving Mumia really wasn't doing him any good. He had not had the hepatitis C shot yet. They told Mumia with these scales, like fish scales, that was black and thick all over his body, that what you do, you don't wash them. You're getting some warm water and you pat them. Another brother that was inside the prison, that even the guards wanted to help them out when they were sick with massages. This brother had magical hands. He looked at Mumia. Mumia was in a wheelchair, head down, couldn't move. The brother said, "Yo, Mumia, you got to get up from there." And he picked Mumia up and he started walking. Mumia said, "He helped me like he held a baby." Started him walking. And walking until Mumia can walk through. The scales on Mumia's body, he said, "I'm gonna put you in a tub of hot water." He says, "And I'm gonna scrub them off." Mumia said, "No." The doctor said, he said, "But I'm telling you." Anyway, the brother saved Mumia's life. Two brothers inside the prison who cared and went up against the administration. We must always talk about the loving and the caring that goes on inside these prisons as well. And these brothers, they not only do that for Mumia, they do it for each other. But anyway, we wound up winning that battle. We wound up going to court, with all the people saying, well, y'all got him off of death row, and that was pure luck. Bullshit. Excuse me, church. That was people power. And we can never say that it was anything other than that. The power, the people working with the lawyers, everybody pulling together. And there are differences in the movements. But when it came to Mumia, all them differences is shoved to the side, and people came together and did what was necessary to get Mumia that hepatitis C medicine. The cure, not the maybe cure, but the cure is what they was trying to keep from Mumia. And because we did that, Mumia got the hepatitis C, and every inmate inside the prison who found out about the court case that we won the battle for, and it was another judge. This was this judge in Scranton. When we went in Scranton, Scranton is known as Ku Klux Klan territory. When we went up there, we act just like we was in Philadelphia. We did the dang with them, for the lack of the other word. But what we found out when we went there was white people was coming over to the microphone with us talking about their families with hepatitis C. How they were suffering, how they suffered inside the prisons and things. People were shocked. I was not shocked, because in traveling around and even going up to the prison, when Minister Louis Farrakhan went up to the prison to visit Mumia, the white guards were saying, "This man shoots from the hip. He's telling the truth." So I'm saying, you have to dispel about a myth. You got to go into places that you've never been before to find out what's going on there. So that support was there. Mumia wound up getting the hepatitis C because the governor, The prisons, we were up there on a weekly basis. And Charles O'Neill from Tanzania came over and demonstrated with us outside the prison. Outside, inside, where they had the big administration building. We was there at Camp Hill, the governor's office, the governor's mansion. And the best place to be was in Center City, where he lived, where his office was at the Bellevue. He was very seldom there, but it was in a key place. And Center City, they're building all new hotels and things there. So we go there, we set up. You only need for 4 or 5 people to go out there, hold the signs, and start kicking off about hepatitis C. What we found out about hepatitis C was 7,000 people in the state of Pennsylvania who had hepatitis C. By wanting to do more and know more about it and pulling people in, we went to the Board of Health. What do you know about hepatitis C? Well, they told us it was 46,000 people in the city, not the state, the city of Philadelphia. They said hepatitis C is an epidemic. And we also went to the AIDS clinics to find out what they knew. So we all pulled in together, the Philadelphia Board of Health, and before they pulled them back, and the AIDS clinic, and everybody else. And we was having massive demonstrations because the right place to be was not in Harrisburg, where there's all where the governor's at, and where all their people was at. You go there and you talk to the people there, and then they're like, okay, thank you for coming. No, you gotta raise pure Cain. And when we would come in front of the governor's office in Philadelphia, the Bellevue Stratford, they would shut it down. They just had to go into the back door. And so that went on 4 minutes. And long enough, and then what we wound up doing, they wound up kicking the governor out the office. The governor wound up saying that people in Philadelphia can get, you know, the hepatitis C cure and in the prison. That was consistent. When people tell you what you can't do, that's how a lot of people lose, because they believe them. Because it's in the interest of this government and to make us think that we can't do. But one thing we do know, again, the people united can never be defeated. Will never be defeated. So right now, that goes to show Mumia's life and the life of other prisoners is not in the hands of these misfits. It is in our hands. And because it was here that shut down the entire West Coast for Mumia, was felt it around the world. It was here that the people demonstrated, it was here that Angela Davis was arrested. And I want to say something about my sisters and brothers up here. And they ain't no part-time revolutionaries. They're not people who talk that talk but don't walk that walk. They have gone to jail. They have gone around the world letting people know what is going on. Right now, in 2 minutes, what I gotta say is we gotta organize like we never organized before. My hair, when I first started this, was jet black or dark brown. It's gray. All of us. And of the one thing about us, we understand that this isn't just about Mumia. This is about each and every last one of us. Mumia is the one who brings attention to the millions. Because of Mumia, a lot of people are getting hepatitis C cured. A lot of mothers, fathers, and children are able to hold their loved ones, even if it's in prison, because so many of them was dying in prison. And but now there's that hope. There's that hope with the Williams case that wasn't there before, because it has gone to the point where people around the world know. And Mr. Krasner, I don't care where he go at, we're there. We're there. And with Judge Tucker, when he made his first decision, the DA Krasner did like the Attorney General did for 45, lied and said that, you know, oh, you know, and he's boasting around about how, you know, he was exonerated. Well, Krasner was damn near the same way. Until the judge, Judge Tucker, a black Republican judge, all of us was like, we could not believe this. He stood up then, and when Krasner started lying, this man took a position, planted his feet down on the ground, told him what a liar he was, told him how he was manipulating the people. This is in the paper last week. So we have the DA who was caught outright lying. And the thing is, Mumy is not doing well, I gotta tell you this. And his skin still itch, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Mumy is putting 4 jars of Vaseline on his entire body, not missing a crack anywhere. Time, but I'm saying this, he now has glaucoma, but he's still working and working his butt off. And with the itching and the pain and stuff that he's going through, his brother is on the verge of dying right now. He lost a child. I'm saying all these things that we go through, he's going through. But I don't think anybody got this itch, the problem, this now problem that he had. But we got to rise up. The things that we did, that we put 10,000 people in the street, and that was the young, it was the old, it was, you know, all of us. And we got to do it again. And we can do it again. And we have been showing these people over and over again that we will not sit by, but our timing, because when they talking about appeal after appeal, we're saying release Mumia. Releasing now based on police, judicial, and prosecutorial misconduct. That's not if and or maybe this is what we want. It's factual. The judge said it. The judge said it. So what I'm saying is, when we leave here tonight, we got to do what is necessary. We got to bring all those rap groups, those entertainers, those poets, the people in the street getting to the churches like we did today. I am so sorry, Jeff. I'm going over time. But rise up, everybody. Let's get ready to do some work. Let's tear this sucker down. We are not without, we're with. On the move. Long live revolution. Long live the people.
I want you to give a very warm welcome to Pulitzer Prize winning novelist, author, poet, Alice Walker.
I'm so quiet. I don't know how I end up with these noisy people. And Jeff, I was active before we met. I grew up in Georgia. And you kind of had to be active to get out of there at the time. Anyway, I'm so happy to see you. It's really wonderful to see you. You've no idea. I went to see Mumia a long time ago. I was sitting there trying to remember what decade it was. What prison it was, because I went to 2 different prisons. He was moved from one to a second one. But what I remember really clearly...
Huntington.
What?
Huntington.
Wasn't there one with Green in there somewhere? Mm. Green?
You went to
yes.
Green?
Yes, Green something. I went to 2. Anyway, what I remember and what was worth remembering really was him. Gorgeous. Really. And You know, they make prisoners come through these doors. I guess there are a lot of them. And they strip search people, even though they know that there's nothing back there in the prison that they would have been able to bring out into where they can talk to you. But they've done that to him. And they make them really try to hold up their clothing, you know. You've seen this probably on television. But I had never seen this. So here comes this gorgeous man, you know, with his chains and holding, seeming to hold his clothing. And I was prepared to be really distressed and upset, and I had felt all of these things because actually they had already taken away my bra because it had metal in it. I mean, really, like, what would you do with a bra to get someone out of prison? Anyway, there I was. And what was so amazing was really important call back there, eh? Helsinki. Anyway, but what was so remarkable was that I think I was more depressed than he was. I mean, or he was trying really beautifully to keep my spirits from sinking through the floor. I am the kind of person who feels you from thousands of miles away, you know. But just to be sure, I will get on my bicycle and I will go 10,000 miles to see your face, because I really, really want to experience a wonder, basically. That's what I've decided after all these years, that my feeling of enjoyment of beauty is what I treasure deeply. So I went, and there he was, and he was this brother. You know, he was this brother of our dreams, really. Kind, even in his condition, you know, bringing forth all of the grace, all of the generosity. You know, all of that goodness that we hope so much to find in people after we've traveled so far and had so many hopes that this person will be who he is, this person will be who she is. So there we were, looking through, you know, all these panes of plastic or glass or whatever they are, as if he could get out. I mean, the prison system, really, we have to get rid of the prisons. And the person who has the best thinking on this, about how we do that, is sitting here, Angela. This woman has burned much midnight oil trying to figure out how to demolish the prison system. It is so rancid. It is so rotten. It is so, you know, we don't deserve that. We don't. I don't care what we've done. We don't deserve what they've set up to punish us. We do not. And it's stupid. It never enlightens us. It never makes us better people. I mean, if you want to really help someone, transform them. Help them transform into something else. You know, don't make them suffer in this way that our system or their system is set up. Anyway, so since that time of meeting Mumia, I have been, you know, very supportive of his writing, of his thinking, of, you know, trying to support him in any way that I can, and being always so amazed by the support of Pan Africa and the Africa family, I had been out of the country when the Moo house was bombed. And I remember standing on a street, wherever I was, you know, in this country, wherever it is, not being able to fully comprehend how in our country they could just bomb a neighborhood with people in it, with children in it, and somehow, you know, act like they could justify it.
Exactly.
Can you imagine? I mean, we don't have to imagine it. This is how we live. They do these horrible things, and then they act as if they're fine, you know. It's like killing all these children in Yemen, you know, and somehow, you know, it's a terrible thing. If one person here does something bad, we focus on that. But not on the fact that you've just killed, what is it, 28,000 children? So I am delighted to be able to speak about this person who I hope will be out among us very soon. And now I keep thinking about what it is that I would like to see him do first thing, you know, walking along somewhere. Would it be watching the sunset, you know, across a pond? Would it be talking to children under a tree? Would it be cuddling with someone that he loves? What would that be like after all these years? And then the other thing that has really intrigued me is how there are certain people in the world that no matter what is said about them, what awful thing is said about them, you just know it doesn't apply. And that is one of the things about Mumia. You know, not many people in this room have even seen him. And yet we feel so strongly that this is a decent person, that this is a good person, that this is someone that we need, you know. We need him. You know, we have to have some people in this world who are willing to be the example of what we can be. And Mumia is one of those people. You know, there he is. Now just think about all of the newscasts that he puts out there that most of us have heard. I mean, you know, there's a saying, work is love made manifest. The man loves us. I mean, he would not be doing all that he does if he didn't love us. And how good this is for us. We need to be loved. You know, we need to have people like Mumia. I mean, you know, it's not that he works a lot. And sometimes you can think of people working a lot. You think, oh, he's in prison, or what else is he gonna do? Or he's a workaholic, or this or that. The other thing you say about people who do stuff. But basically, when you work night and day, you know, in ill health, good health, whatever health, you're working. Basically, your fuel has to be love. It has to be. And that is why we feel, you know, people in this room, we haven't given up. We'll never give up. You know, I was thinking that, you know, why am I always with these people? With such odd memories. But it's because that is just how it is. I mean, you end up, you know, I'm now old enough to see kind of how you end up. But you end up with the people who belong with you. And it's such a beautiful thing to finally see that you struggling, you know, when you're 20s, God knows, I wouldn't go back there. Your 30s, your 40s, you're trying, you're working, you're doing your best, you know, you're struggling, you're trying to understand, you know, what is this about? It's so hard sometimes. And people, goodness knows, I mean, all of us in here, I mean, we've had it, all of us, right? People, there's always something wrong with us. But we keep going, you know, we keep going. And in a couple of days after somebody slapped us down, we get up and we're actually cheerful. you know, as if to say, you know, take that. You know, I'm going to dance. Screw you. So that is a great comfort to know that this man that we love so much, you know, while we're here, he loves us back. He loves us. And that is so incredible. You know, he's in there, you know, being mistreated. He's writing these books. And he's so bold. Don't you love that about Mumia? I mean, he's just so friggin' bold. You know, they run their little lying newscasts out there for everybody to be completely confused by. And then Mumia will, sitting there in his cell, look right through all of it and send us out the real truth about whatever's happening. And I always wonder about that. I think, well, don't these prison wardens or guards or whoever they are, don't they ever read anything? But apparently not. So I am just quietly delighted to be here with all of you. Because, you know, we're loved by someone really marvelous and great. And that keeps us going in our lives. It's a great gift. And the other thing that we remember is that actually, in every generation, or sometimes just every 100 years, life gives us this. And think about that. What a wonderful, rare, amazing thing that is. That we're not forgotten. We're not alone. We have someone who is going to show us, really, what it can mean to be a human being on this planet with a loving heart and a great soul.
She's a renowned author, scholar, speaker, and champion of the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal and all other political prisoners. Let's give a warm welcome to Angela Davis.
Good evening, everyone. I don't think I'm quite as quiet as Alice, but I certainly can't match Pam's fire. It's really wonderful to be here, I thank Jeff for all of the organizing work he's done over the years. I think Eula is still back there. Thank you, Eula, Stephen. And I really enjoyed listening to Judith Ritter's remarks. Both she and I are professors, so we came with our notes. But I wanted to say first that this gathering feels really, really wonderful. And at the same time, I feel sad because we shouldn't have to keep doing this over and over and over again. Mumia should already be free. I feel really sad every time I imagine him still behind bars. And then I visit him, and I have pretty much the same experience that Alice had. He's in much better shape than I am in relation to his conditions. And I'm happy because there's still people like those of us here this evening, all over the world, literally all over the world, who are not giving up. And they will continue to fight until he comes home. So, you know, it's been almost 40 years since Mumia was first arrested. Am I right?
Yes, right.
Pam, 37 years or something like that? Yeah. And despite the fact that he is behind bars and he has suffered, as Pam pointed out, avoidable illnesses directly related to his incarceration, he is intellectually and spiritually as strong as ever. We heard that in his voice that opened the gathering of this evening. As a matter of fact, he is our spirit. I want to join Alice in saying that he is our strength. And if we believe that a better future is possible, it will be a future in which Mumia is free. Amen. And of course, this is a critical moment. And we need to take advantage of the opening, the legal opening that now exists. I did, Judith, try to read some of the addendum to the decision that Judge Leon Tucker gave, and I was really impressed by the words he used. He emphasized that, quote, to perform its high function in the best way, justice must satisfy the appearance of justice. In other words, there is no justice when there appears to be bias. And he went on to say, justice is being conformable, human and divine, fair, impartial, honest in administering, coordinating and relating with others no matter what. Not most of the time, but at all times, be it at trial or on appeal. Now, we know that, and we heard Judith and Pam and others speak about this, that that Judge Castile had written a letter to the governor, and I think Judith quoted from it, to send a clear and dramatic message that the governor needed to send a clear and dramatic message to all police killers that the death penalty in Pennsylvania actually means something. Now, I have to tell you that sometimes I'm critical of the tendency to focus so myopically on the law and on the legal dimension. I had these fights with my own lawyers, you know, when I was in jail, because I insisted that the people were going to free me. It was, of course, really important what happened in the courtroom, but history would be made by those in the streets. And I'm not saying that the legal dimension of these cases is not important, but because oftentimes we tend to act as if all we have to do is to point out what is true and accurate in accordance with the law, then our job is done. We act as if the law itself has agency. We act as if we have to do nothing else but point out what the law declares, and then our job is done. We know the law says that slavery was abolished. We know the law says that we're all equal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we are the only ones who can act. We're the only ones who can demand equality. We're the only ones who can demand justice, who can demand an end to the contemporary afterlives of slavery. We're the only ones who can say, abolish the prison industrial complex. The law will not do that for us. So there is this unprecedented opening in Mumia's case. And we need to revive and re-energize the struggle for his freedom. This is the time to do everything within our power to guarantee that we can take advantage of this opening and that we can indeed bring Mumia home. We need to do this for Mumia, but we also know, and this has been emphasized throughout the evening, that Mumia never speaks only for himself, never. He always speaks out on behalf of others, on behalf of other death row prisoners, on behalf of other prisoners who have Hep C, on behalf of other prisoners more broadly, on behalf of other black people, on behalf of other targets of repression. So when we speak out for Mumia, we also speak for Rochelle McGee, who was my co-defendant, who has been in prison for 55 years. When we speak out for Mumia, we also speak for Lynette Peltier, who has been behind bars for 43 years. And you know, as much as we are missing Obama today, given the current occupant of the White House, I don't think I will ever forgive Obama for not granting clemency to Lynette before he left office. He could have freed Lynette Peltier. And when we speak out for Mumia, we speak for Assata Shakur. Assata should be able to come home. We know that since the creation of Black Lives, the Black Lives Matter Network and the movement founded by Patrice Cullors, Alicia Garza, and Opal Tometi, people have been chanting this quote from a letter that Assata wrote. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love each other and support each other. We have nothing to lose but our chains. You've heard it, right?
That's right.
Those words reverberate through all of our movements. Well, I mention this because it was chanted a few days ago in a gathering, a Democratic gathering of 2020 hopefuls. Well, it sparked a great deal of protest by police and their supporters. I mean, I think it's a good thing that our struggles are seeping into official political circles. And as a matter of fact, JetBlue had a poster of Assata that was a part of an exhibition at the terminal in JFK. On the poster were these words: became the first woman to be placed on the FBI's 10 most wanted list after escaping to Cuba from prison, where she was serving a life sentence for the 1973 murder of a police officer. Well, anyway, The poster also read, many people believe Shakur to be a political champion who is innocent of the criminal accusations against her. Now, JetBlue had no idea. They had a bunch of posters of Women's History Month or something like that. But then, of course, they apologized when us. But I think it's great that this kind of thing is happening, that the work we do is bleeding into the mainstream. And I think about all of these people and many others when I think of Mumia, because Mumia has always insisted that when we think of him, we think of others. He has enlightened us in so many different areas about racism, about empire, about incarceration, about Palestine. As a matter of fact, Mumia spoke out about Palestine before many people had the courage to publicly ally themselves with justice for Palestine. As a matter of fact, in 2013, he said, welcome to the Israeli occupation, blessed by the US government as its imperial outposts, where the lives of Palestinians are broken into thousands of pieces daily, where everything from olive trees to water sources, everything but the sun itself is locked up, barred, caged from the people of Palestine. Mumia understands connections. He understands that to fight against racism is also to fight against heteropatriarchy. It's also to fight against anti-Semitism. He understands the centrality of Islamophobia. And I could go on and on and on. And of course, now he's produced a new book, which I can't wait to leave. I understand there may be copies here.
Yes.
The second volume of his Murder Incorporated. Mumia deserves to be free. And I think, and we have the opportunity to bring him home. He is known all over the world. He's perhaps the best known prisoner in the entire world. You know, everywhere I go, people know about Mumia. I was just last week in Uruguay, and people were talking about his case. When we free Mumia, we provide a major impetus for the freedom of other political prisoners, of political prisoners in Palestine, in the Basque Country, Kurdish political prisoners like Abdullah Öcalan. So Mumia's birthday is coming up. You know, each April 24th, we reflect especially on our obligation to free Mumia. And I understand on this April 24th, there will be events all over the country. There will be teach-ins, there will be rallies, there will be student walkouts. And so let us use this opportunity to amplify his story. Let us spread his story. Let us bring new people into the campaign. Let's bring the younger generation into this campaign, because Mumia speaks for them as well. Let us bring vast numbers of people into the campaign to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Thank you.